You know, the octopus is littered through cultural history. I'm thinking Ursula in The Little Mermaid, the Beatles Octopus's Garden, Henry, the octopus in The Wiggles, even the Kraken. They've even got their own corner of TikTok. It's called TikToktopus, and even a niche subgenre of adult films. Despite this, we don't fully understand this intelligent and intriguing creature of the sea. National Geographic's new docuseries, Secrets of the Octopus, aims to uncover more about these curious cephalopods. Marine biologist, host and producer of the series, Dr. Alex Schnell, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I know you grew up in Sydney around the beaches, and I know you had your first experience with an octopus at quite a young age. You even described this as your first ET moment. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I had the luxury of growing up on the eastern beaches of Sydney, and so Clovelly Beach was my playground. I would come home, drop my bag off, and then just head down there every afternoon and have my head and hands practically in rock pools, just trying to explore and discover all the critters that lived in there. Yeah, and one afternoon I came across this quite soft, odd-looking critter with two really large eyes, and I was a little nervous at first because I didn't really know what it was, but this creature seemed to be as curious about me as I was about it, and it reached out and touched my hand.
What does it feel like? Is it sort of like you're being gently sucked?
Yeah, it's really softer than you would expect. I think a lot of people have this idea that octopuses are maybe a bit slimy, but it's just a very light caress with a little bit of suction.
This ET moment, as you describe it, spurred you into your PhD in marine biology. In 2021, you were part of a team that did a study on the self-control of another cephalopod, the cuttlefish. What kind of self-control are we talking about with the cuttlefish? Obviously known for its vibrant colours, both as a display for mating, but also when it feels threatened or harmed.
So the type of self-control we really explored there is delay of gratification, whether they can control themselves in the face of temptation when they're faced with a treat and wait for a better but delayed reward. And so we very much modelled this study on the Stanford Marshmallow Test, which was developed in the 1970s to test for self-control in young children. But instead of marshmallows, we obviously offered the cuttlefish something more appealing like shrimp.
I read a pretty interesting point about the octopus, and by extension, most cephalopods I think are the same. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but being almost the opposite of humans, they're invertebrates, and we are vertebrates. They live in water, breathing water, and we're on land, breathing air. So we haven't shared any common ancestor for hundreds of millions of years, and yet there is some sort of connection between us, isn't there? Something perhaps more about the application of intelligence, if that's the right word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Our last common ancestor looked like a very simple worm with a very simple nervous system over 550 million years ago. And we've followed completely different evolutionary paths. Like you said, they don't have a backbone. We do have a backbone. They live in very different environments, but most of all, they're not social like a lot of animals, humans included, that we usually associate intelligence with. And yet we're seeing these familiar traits of intelligence in animals that we would consider relatively solitary. So that's why they're such an enigma and offer a really important piece of the puzzle as to how intelligence might have evolved.
But it's almost like this piece doesn't fit in with the rest of the puzzle, because how do you account for this seemingly high level of intelligence without any community to learn from, to share, to display and to learn from each other?
You're right. What it does offer is actually an alternative path to intelligence. So maybe social engagement, social community, social pressures aren't as important that we once previously thought, and perhaps intelligence can evolve in the absence of these types of social pressures, which does bring in a completely different perspective as to how intelligence can evolve in the animal kingdom.
You know, I recently interviewed someone about the intelligence of magpies, and the study found that baby birds who were surrounded by more adult birds tended to be smarter because they could learn from them. I was fascinated to learn in the series that because octopus mothers die after their babies are born, there's no information passed between mother and child. So how do octopuses learn the basics of survival and instinct?
You're right. They're lone rangers from the moment that they hatch from the egg. They have no guidance from parents, no help from siblings. And so what we think is that they're very curious critters, and they find a lot of things in their environment as a learning opportunity to be able to learn as much as they can at a really fast rate. Because they only live 1 to 2 years. So they're living life in the fast lane, and they really have to, I guess, get their wits about them because they've got nothing to protect themselves but their brains.
If you've just joined me on RN Thrive, my guest is marine biologist and science communicator Dr. Alex Schnell. She's telling us about her most recent project, The Secrets of the Octopus. It's a docuseries made by National Geographic. You know, The Secrets of the Octopus really seems like a passion project for you. You kind of get to work with this animal that you're passionate about and the people that also research its behaviours, and it is stunning work. Academy Award-winning director James Cameron was a producer on the series. He actually studied marine biology in the 70s, I believe. So what was it like working with him? Is this someone who's also, you know, clearly as excited about octopuses as you are?
Absolutely. I mean, James Cameron is an ambassador of our oceans. He has such a keen interest for the marine environment, for the deep sea, and for octopuses. And so having him oversee the project, I think, really allowed the series to pop, have his creative direction, gave the series just a different type of element. And I think you can really see that when you view it on the big screen. But he was also super excited. We do a short Q&A at the end of episode 3 talking about the footage that we captured during the series. And he was super excited about what we were seeing, and even reveals that some of his characters in the upcoming Avatar films were very much inspired by octopuses.
I understand you became a mother. You had a newborn of your own whilst you were filming a large part of this series. I'm curious about this because you must have been looking for parallels where young creatures are learning and adapting to their environment and perhaps forming relationships. Did that kind of cross your mind whilst you're underwater?
Absolutely. I think that it was, yeah, my daughter came on every shoot with us. And so the first shoot, she was only 5 months old. And I think it was a beautiful experience being able to connect with different octopuses, including Scarlet, who is a day octopus on the series, and being completely mindful in the moment because you are down there and you just have such intimate interactions. And I would try and bring that back on land when I would interact with my daughter, and just seeing how she's starting to develop, you know, certain skills of how to navigate the world. It was really beautiful drawing those parallels during the film.
It seems like you would know almost everything there is to know about these cephalopods, but I'm curious about what you learnt fresh by spending all this time underwater with the day octopus. Was there some things that made you go, oh, wow, this is new, this is fresh?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think so. I've worked with them for over 15 years, but I still feel like there's so much more to reveal. And there was lots of new stuff that we were witnessing down there. So one example with Scarlet, for example, is that I was able to point out different prey items to her, different crabs to her. And while we know that day octopuses do collaborate with different fish species on the Great Barrier Reef, and they hunt together to, you know, they play different roles and they hunt together to flush out prey, I thought I'd try, you know, this wacky idea and start pointing to crabs that she was missing. And to my astonishment, she responded. So that was just such an exciting revelation. We also had, you know, different behaviours that we were seeing between male and female, like the first courtship behaviour we'd ever seen in any of the species of octopuses, where the male would do this elaborate dance to try and attract the attention of Scarlet. And it just reminded me of what you would see in, you know, tropical birds, the way that a male would try and attract a female.
What an incredible experience. It's a really beautiful series, beautifully shot, and it makes you really realize how we aren't alone on this planet. There is other kinds of intelligence. We just need to watch and observe, as you have done firsthand. My guest today has been Dr. Alex Schnell. You can see her on National Geographic's new docuseries, Secrets of the Octopus, which you can watch on Disney Plus or the National Geographic streaming service. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.